Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, I have a very special guest with me, and I have BJ, and she is an author, social entrepreneur, investor. She is the founder of Immigrants Thrive, and at Immigrants Thrive, they have a community of immigrants, and they're empowering them with knowledge, tools, resources that they need to save more, pay off debt, build wealth in a sustainable way, and give back to their communities. BJ also has her own podcast entitled Thrive with BJ, where she educates immigrants and others about proper investing and money management. BJ, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Keisha. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And so I just wanted to get started, just getting the audience familiar with you and about your journey and about your passion and mission to help immigrants, because I think that's so needed, especially in North America and Canada, where I am and where you are in the United States. So can you tell us a bit more about your journey and how this became a passion for you?
So I'm an immigrant myself. I'm originally from Nigeria. I relocated to the States about 3 years ago, less than 4 years in a way, a little over 3 years. And before I moved here, in Nigeria, I ran a not-for-profit. Mm-hmm. I used to tell people jokingly that I was semi-retired in Nigeria because I had worked many years as a financial advisor. I worked with my husband in the family business, and then I just went into not-for-profit, and I was focused on enterprise development among people who are disadvantaged groups, you know, in Nigeria, various disadvantaged groups. And then we suddenly had to move. It wasn't a planned or prepared move, you know, to the States. So it was a bit difficult and challenging for us because we were like so established back home, you know. And then getting here, I just saw that things were quite different. And even though we had visited in the past, we'll come back to North America for vacations, trainings and certifications. We never stayed more than a month, you know. But coming here, I became more acquainted with the challenges immigrants faced, especially first and second generation immigrants. I think the first thing I learned about North America is the fact that if you're going to thrive, if you're going to do well, you need one of two things. You either need a lot of money or you have good quality information. If you don't have either of them, well, you're going to be in a bit of a bind. Mm-hmm. And then as I, you know, related and moved around more in the immigrants community, I was so hit by the fact that people had been in North America for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and they really didn't have a grasp around how to find a balance in life. I was just here 2 years and I was literally advising people, oh, why do this? If you do that, you're going to be doing this forever. I could see people not taking advantage, because I think it came with the mindset. I wasn't certain, but I was seeing that vibe and was like, oh, don't worry, if you're here, you just need to be ready to struggle, to hustle, and it's a continuous thing, and just be grateful for whatever you get, you know? So that's where the seed got planted. But I think what really made me launch out was an experience I had with a close friend. He's also Nigerian. I met him in an Uber, and he became friends with the family, very close. He would help us around, and he shared with us the challenges of his immigration story. Mm. He had been almost 10 years in the States, and he wasn't really settled. So I became very invested in him. I said, okay, rather than do this, why don't you do that? Get you into a business that will... I was really trying to help him structure his life. But then as a new immigrant myself, I had a lot doing myself, you know? So I was really, really distracted. And the pandemic hit, and I realized that I lost touch with him, literally. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I knew, someone called me to say, did I know this person passed away? And it really, really broke my heart, because I was so familiar with his situation, the responsibilities he had back home here. He was almost celebrating getting his citizenship, you know. And in the midst of all that, he just passed away. And I just had this guilt, like maybe I could have done more for him. I could have been there more for him. But I was so busy trying to both settle in and having lived such a public life in Nigeria, when I came here, I'm like, I'm just going to be quiet, sit in my corner. I'm not going to attract a lot of attention, you know? So that hit me really hard. And after mourning a bit, I just knew that this idea that had been coming up, I needed to get on with it and begin to help people. So yeah, that's the background story around why I started the Immigrants Thrive community.
Yeah, no, and that's amazing. And such an amazing story, Fiji, because as you're speaking, I think about immigrants in Canada and their studies that show, for instance, it takes them 10 to 15 years just to establish themselves. And as you know, same in the United States for Canada, most immigrants have to retrain. So they have to go back to school.
Yeah.
They either have to switch professions or, you know, retrain in their stated professions. And then they have to try to get, you know, a job in their field and then try to move up from scratch, from bottom up and start from the very beginning. And worse, if you immigrate when you have young kids or starting a young family already, it's even worse. So I know that firsthand. I know that struggle, been there, done that. And so that's why I'm so interested in this, because I think it's wonderful, especially when it comes to finances, because when you're a new immigrant, you have so many expenses related to school, you know, settling, buying a home or renting somewhere, setting up your kids. And so it's hard. And so I wanted to know from you, Fiji, especially with your background and your skills, what do you advise immigrants in terms of their financial habits and their money management? What are you advising them to do, which would probably be different, let's say, if they were not immigrants?
Being an immigrant, your financial journey is quite peculiar, because I'm surprised you're very familiar with the challenges immigrants face. Many people never think about it. They just don't get it, you know? And yeah. The truth is, our challenges are peculiar. They are unique, because people who said to me, oh, this field is saturated, why are you going into this field? Look for something else. And I'm like, yeah, it probably is saturated because you are a resident here and you've lived here most of your life, or maybe you're an eighth generation immigrant or so, but there are not a lot of advice target specific to immigrants. And I'll give you an example. When people here in the States, it's a big thing to build your credit. And when they talk about credit building, I see a lot of them say, what you need to do is ask your parents to put you on their card. That would really help. If you're a first or second generation immigrant, that's not an option. I hear people say, I'm going to help you take out the negative things off of your credit history to help your credit go up. As a new immigrant, that doesn't apply because you don't even have a history. You're dealing with not having a history, right? So the advice, the situation, people, a lot of things that are put out there, they're great. They're awesome, but they are not target specific to immigrants. They don't take into consideration the fact that a lot of immigrants are coming here. Maybe they're already working at management level. You have a chauffeur driven car back home. You're living really well, and you literally have to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. You know? And then another thing that I noticed is a lot of immigrants base their decisions on the experiences of other immigrants. And the experience of other immigrants are more frequently negative, you know? So they are starting off on the wrong footing. They put on the wrong goggles, very pessimistic, just with the, I'm here to struggle. I just need to be humble and really struggle. I have to start from scratch. So they have an idea of, oh, this is a rat race. I'm going to be doing this for a long time. Very few of them consider opportunities that they don't even, what financial freedom? It's not really a thing for them, because they're like, no, I'm starting from scratch. So I'm supposed to be ready to struggle. So they make their decisions based on those things. And I understand why they would, because other immigrants who have good intentions are telling you, oh, this was my struggle. This is the path you have to follow. You need to go study nursing. That's the way you can make it. That's, you know, so they all have, it's like you're already filled with the wrong advice. So it really is even hard getting the right thing into them. Even when you try to think, be like, oh no, those things may work for people who are from here, but we have a different path. You know, so for me, the first assignment I always undertake is trying to change their mindset, letting them understand that you can be here, you can have an abundance mindset. You don't have to have been here for 10 years before you can consider yourself as having settled down. You know, things can work for you. And you know, the thing about having a wrong mindset is this: it blocks your internal eyesight to opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll give you an example. I was speaking with someone, I was making my hair at a salon recently, and the owner is an immigrant. And I was saying to her, oh, these are the things I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. I'm trying to purchase this investment property. And she's like, what? When did you come here? Because she knew me from Nigeria. She said, that won't work. Because, and she listed everything, the reasons why it shouldn't work. She's like, it doesn't matter how much cash you have here, Fiji. There are things that must be put into perspective for you to get access to that. And I had to educate her and tell her a few opportunities. I'm like, these rules, that they are not selective. They don't have a bias against you because of that. Because she was here at least 2 years before me. And I told her, she said, oh, but you couldn't have grown your credit. I said, yes, in 2 years, my credit is already very good. You know, and so it's those opportunities that, and for her, it was such a change. It was such an eye-opener, something that simple, what I thought was simple, you know. I just realized that the first hurdle to overcome is the mindset. Because when I let them know, it doesn't have to be that hard, then they can open their heart and their eyes can begin to see opportunities.
Yes, absolutely. And that's something I firmly believe in too. And in Holistic Wealth, I talk a lot about mindset. And I think, to be honest with you, it's because of the reasons you listed above, because I find that you mentioned, you know, immigrants thinking about the struggle, because when they come in a new country, they're just ready to struggle because they've heard of the struggle, you know, and it creates a sort of scarcity mindset, which isn't good, you know, but I know what they're thinking and I know what the thought process is. And of course, there are people saying in the background, you know, like, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, forget that, you know, forget that idea. You're just here, you're just coming, you have to, you know, and there's all these hurdles and barriers and constraints that they put up. And, you know, it can be quite daunting for new immigrants. So yes, absolutely. Mindset is so important. And there's so many things, as you mentioned, like so many things that you said a while ago with, you know, like do nursing or do this, get into this field because it's quick and easy and you'll, you know, you'll get a job. And, you know, like I have lots of nurses in my family, they're amazing, but, you know, it does really, you know, set in motion this trajectory where we're not aligned with our passions. We're not doing what we're called to do and living our purpose.
It's like they don't have time for that. You can't afford that, you know?
Exactly.
That because you have all these people wearing their challenges like badges of honor. Like, no, you can't. You can't afford that right now. We are here to, you know?
Exactly.
You don't have that privilege. That's the word you have.
Exactly. That's a privilege. And so you're basically channeled into this, you know, into a set career or path. And then it becomes hard. And, you know, the sad thing about it, Fiji, which is what I wanted to ask you about next, is that people become unhappy and they've spent, let's say, X amount of dollars doing training for this program when they realize I'm so unhappy and now I need to switch. And they're at a point where they're considering switching and they know they have to make that switch because they can't continue on that path. And so I'm wondering, with your group and with your work so far, if you've seen that and how you counsel people on that when, and it's so hard, the journey as an immigrant, because of course there's the pressure to get your feet on the ground fast enough, get a job fast enough, because you hear things like, oh, the money's dwindling. You know, the money I came with is dwindling.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? So I need to get into something fast. And so most people, a lot of people get into what they call survival jobs, not a career. It's a survival job just to get, you know, something in the door so the money doesn't dwindle. Yeah. And so for people listening in or for people thinking about, yeah, I had to take that survival job, but here I am now and I need to make that change. Do you have any advice for people like that?
Yes. What I would say, what I usually say to them is, I understand the need for a survival job. And it for a lot of people who are not privileged to have coming with resources, because I know people who would borrow money to get in here and their family back home is under pressure for them to start paying off the debts they took to come here.
Yeah.
I understand why you would want to take a survival job. I understand it. Go ahead, do it. Do what you have to do. But just don't set yourself up in a way that it's a long-term thing. For example, if you would hate, and then again, I'm going to be beating on nurses. You hate nursing. You can't stand a lot of that. But you go ahead and invest thousands of dollars to become a nurse, not just a nursing assistant or something temporary to do while you're finding your way. Then that investment, it's like a bondage. You tied yourself to, because you're imagining, I spent this number of years, this amount of resources, I'm not leaving it. So you become a slave to your own doing. So yeah, people do need to get something to start off right away. And I do understand that. Please do. But when you plan, have the long term in mind. Mm-hmm. If you're doing this, if you're moving into a country and you're going to stay upward of 5 years, whatever you're doing right now should have long-term implications. You should be thinking long-term. I understand why. I know have friends who came here as lawyers, and I saw them waitress. They would do work as nursing assistants, real professionals. But especially the one particular lady, she said when she started as a nursing assistant, her colleague said to her, "You're so brilliant. Go ahead and apply to be an RN. You get the exams easy, you know, one try." And she said, "No, I'm not going to do that because that's not the path I want to take." Mm-hmm. And that was the best decision she made. Today, she's a real estate broker, but she took her time. Yeah. She did those odd jobs. You know, she nannied at a point. She was a waitress at a point. But she particularly, specifically refused to get long-term certifications because she had her goal on one thing. And then when she found her fit, she was now able to do the exact thing she wanted to do. She took her time, did the research. Oh, this is the kind of life I want to live. I want to have time, work from home, you know. But when you just jump into what everybody is doing, you just, then you really, your chances, your opportunities, your options are greatly reduced. Why? Because you're so committed in it already. So yeah, I do understand the essence of, oh, let's do this. But I would say the greatest problem I have seen among immigrants is, I call it mental laziness. Mm-hmm. People don't want to do the research. They don't want to take the risk. They don't want to take anything on their shoulders. They just want to ask, oh, what is working? What are other people like us doing? What? They don't look out for opportunities. They're afraid of taking the risk. So because they don't want to commit themselves mentally, they just want to know what works for others. Alrighty, let's do it. Mm-hmm. But if you can just take out a little more time, it will cost you effort. It will cost maybe a little more dollars because you're any less in the beginning, but because you're looking at the long-term thing. But in the long run, you will thank yourself for doing that research. So one of the things we do at Immigrants Thrive is we introduce immigrants to opportunities that we believe will help them get established faster. If you have some funds, depending on the amount, we'll let you know the options you have. If you have no funds at all and you need to build up to a particular level, we'll let you know what to do, you know. So we give those options, but I always say to people, depending on your city, whether you're in Canada or in the US, do some research. Mm-hmm. And then be ready to take responsibility for whatever decisions you made. Okay, but think long term. Don't think, how do I survive in the next 3, 1, 2, 4, 5 years? Because then you enter into the survival mode and it is really difficult to get out of that, because then it's just a rat race. Day to day, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And so I'm thinking about the top three money issues that immigrants face, Vijay, in terms of, you know, you mentioned a couple with setting up your credit, you know, getting that credit mm-hmm. history going and potentially, you know, paying down debt, for instance, if they took out a loan before immigrating. And I'm just wondering if, based on your experience with working in the community, if you could highlight the top two or three money issues that immigrants face and potentially how, you know, they can address those.
Of course, you have to deal with credit, given how important it is, but it's a short-term problem because it's something you can deal with quite easily. The greatest challenge I see in the immigrant community, I think, is, you know, when we are guilty of holding on to past challenges.
Yes.
For example, if you come from a country like my Nigeria, you don't have any trust in the financial institutions there.
Right.
Nigeria, we believe that if you're taking out insurance, you're wasting your money.
Yeah.
Because the insurance companies will wiggle out of their commitment when it's time to pay. And they do try to do that. It's maturing more. But because of that, I've seen immigrants come into this country, even after they've settled, after 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, they've settled down and they don't have any protection for their families. I had someone I know recently, through a friend. Her husband passed away recently and she's a nurse, a senior nurse. She's been a nurse for a while. Although they couldn't afford to, because he desired to be buried back home in Nigeria. They couldn't afford to take him back home. They had to go raise a GoFundMe, do that. And this could have been taken care of by maybe putting aside, what, $40, $50, $30 every month towards, just by buying an insurance.
Yeah.
In fact, there are products right now that even with a life insurance, some institutions to give you what they call a concierge service. So wherever you want to be buried, everything is handled. So it is, and it is rooted in the fact that, for some people anyway, the fact that, oh, they are thinking because the institutions back home are not so reliable, they do not understand that the insurance institution here is so mature that it is reliable.
Yes.
And some people, it's just superstition. They're like, oh, why would you take life insurance? Are you ready to die?
Yes.
So it is those important decisions about protecting your family. I mean, they are eager to work. Some of them are even eager to start investing.
Yes.
But I say to them, it's like building a house without a foundation.
Yes.
A little wind and everything can be rocked. You know, anything could happen to your investment. Oh, I have 401k, I go over 100,000 and then the market stops and then you lose 40, 50% and your everything is going. But when you have protection, you know, at least your basics are covered. Nobody looks forward to losing a loved one. But if it does happen, don't you want your children taken care of? Don't you want your spouse provided for? The house you just bought, don't you want to ensure they can pay for it?
Yeah.
So I think the number one thing I always say to immigrants is make sure you and your family are protected against unforeseen circumstances. You know, the immigrants who don't even really pay for health insurance, especially if they are self-employed. I'm like, how can you take that risk in the United States? One of the highest causes of bankruptcy is illness because healthcare is so expensive in this crazy country. And yet people can afford it. They're living a reasonably good life, but they don't think to make sure because the idea of protection is not very big, especially Africa, around African and Asian immigrants. It's not a big thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a lot of families suffer because they fail to make those decisions.
No, you're absolutely right. And for audience members who know my story, my husband died fairly young. He was just 34. I was 31. And one of the things I tell people, and I say this in my book, I tell people all the time, that is the basics, that's foundation. You have to do it. I mean, we had a life insurance that cost us just $25 a month. But when you look at the risks of not having one compared to the reward, I mean, my husband died when I after I gave birth to my second child, just 8 weeks. I was young. My. He was young. We were just starting a family. And so absolutely, like, I cannot emphasize it enough of why it's so important and all the reasons that you listed a while ago. And I know this firsthand because this happened to me. And so it's something I'm actually on a mission now to make women, everyone understand, because most women will outlive their husbands too by about 15 years on average, to make them understand that this is critical. It's critical for you and your children. And there's so many options out there with insurance, and it's getting easier and easier. And one of the things that I want to emphasize too is for people to do this while you're younger, just so don't wait until you're 50 when you think, as you mentioned, PJ, when you think, okay, I'm closer now, so let me do it now so the insurance company doesn't get my money. What if your spouse dies in their early 30s? That's what happened to me. So I know it all too well. It can happen. And so, yes, absolutely. This is something that everyone needs to do. And that's so, so important. And so, Fiji, I know these are really good lessons. And I'm so happy that you're on the show to talk about these things. And one of the things that I've highlighted is also, this personal financial identity quiz that I talk about. I ask my guests to share their results every week because I think it's so important. And it's so important for immigrants too, because it's so amazing that once you get into North American culture, the spending habits change and things that you wouldn't buy previously, you start to buy, you start to follow the crowd. And And so immigrants can get into trouble. With credit, they can get into trouble with spending and, adapting a certain lifestyle. And so I just wanted you to share with us your results and kind of your thoughts around that, because I think, we've been having some tremendous insights from previous guests talking about their personal financial identity. So I'll let you tell our audience what your results were.
Minimalist.
Okay. And so do you think that is roundabout what you would expect? Does that fit with your lifestyle?
Yes, it is. Because the thing is, I remember working as a financial advisor in Nigeria in early 2000s. And because of the nature, the way Nigeria is, if you're going to talk about money, I was into wealth management, you needed to look the part. So it would look really lavish. Mm-hmm. The hair, everything had to appear like, to tell people I can manage your money because I've got some myself.
Right.
And I remember those years, I made a lot of money, but they didn't have much to account for because of that ideology. So when I changed companies, I moved to working as a financial advisor in a UK company. I had a 360 degree turnaround. I did things completely different. And I can tell you that the results I got from the 5 years I worked with the UK company was totally different from when I worked with a South African company. similar role, you know, almost the same pay, but completely different attitude and approach.
That's interesting, because that's true. I think in a lot of cultures too, especially when, yes, when it has to do with wealth management or money, money management, there's this perception that you have to put forward this certain persona and drive a certain car and dress a certain way and for people to, that's an interesting take. And so have you seen, you know, in terms of yours, like the minimalist, have you seen where that type of philosophy spills over into your business decisions as well, and even your investment decisions?
Yes, I would say so. But I also totally agree that it can be quite different, because as minimalistic as I am on a personal level, I think the area I've found it the most difficult to control spending is when it comes to my business. I'm willing and ready to invest everything. And I had to remind myself recently that the way you budget personally, you have to start doing that in business. Even though I'm passionate about it, because I run a not-for-profit and then I have a profitable business, right? Mm-hmm. I was going overboard, you know, like, oh, no holds barred. I need the best quality of this. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that.
Right.
When I checked my overheads, I realized it was really negatively impacting my profit and my ability to grow the business. Mm-hmm. You know, so it took conscious effort to now begin to apply the same principles I'd learned for personal finance, you know, strict budgeting. I had to personally and consciously, I still have to make myself do that consciously, you know, like, no, take this option, keep an eye on the overhead. It shouldn't go above that, because my husband runs his business and I have my personal businesses. So my husband's business, like his auditors, I'm always keeping him in check. Oh, do this, don't do that. But my personal business, I wasn't doing the same thing, you know. And they would say, do what I say, not what I do.
Right, right. It would be interesting to hear if he's a minimalist too. Do you think he'd be a minimalist?
Yes, he is. But he's this kind of, on a personal note, he really is a minimalist. He's a simple guy. But where my husband, his greatest weakness is his inability to say no. Right. You know, he wants to solve everybody's problem. He wants to come, everybody in Nigeria, if they have a problem, he feels it's his responsibility to solve it. So I always have to be like, no, I promise you those guys will be fine. If you died today, they wouldn't go down the grave with you. Just set a budget. This is your giving budget. When it's expired, you say, okay, next month, I'll come to you. So
that's interesting. And that's another lesson there, I think, for everyone in terms of just, you know, saying no, regardless of that financial identity. So that's interesting. So Fijay, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights with us on the podcast today. Can you tell listeners where to find you on social media and your website?
Sure. Thank you, Keisha. You can find me at www.immigrantsthrive.com and www.fijayadom.com. So my name and my last name, or immigrantsthrive.com. And on social media, it's the same thing, fijayadom or at immigrantsthrive.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much again for joining us, Fijay. It was good having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks: free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant.
Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth 32 Life Lessons to help you find purpose, prosperity, and happiness.